In this episode of The Flop House, we review the number 23, the scariest of all the base 10 integers, and now, the special Halloween remix of the Flop House theme.
When I was working in my laboratory, two skeletons came in, and a mummy was also dancing. Later on, vampires came in, and the vampires had a friend, and it was this creature from the Black Lagoon, and there were other Frankensteins there. One of them was a serial killer. Is that enough?
I guess.
Wikipedia has this to say about the number 23. Walter Sparrow, Jim Carrey, is an animal control officer married to a cake shop owner, Agatha, Virginia Madsen. They have a son, Robin. The film opens with Walter narrating the events of his recent birthday. He begins by describing how he received a call to catch a dog named Ned. Walter is late meeting his wife, and she enters a bookstore where she leafs through the book called The Number 23 by Topsy Kretz. When Walter arrives, Agatha announces that she is going to buy the book for him for his birthday. Walter starts reading the book, finding odd similarities between himself and the main character, a detective known as Fingerling. The book details Fingerling's meeting with the suicide blonde, whose obsession with the number 23 drives her to murder her boyfriend and commit suicide. The viewer sees Walter as the main character in this novel, while the real Walter becomes obsessed with the 23 phenomenon. He shows his wife and son his own calculations, written on their walls, in which his name, house, and social security number all add up to 23. Walter visits Dr. Isaac French, Danny Houston, a friend of Agatha's, whom he hopes will be able to explain what's happening. As Walter is drawn ever deeper into Fingerling's story, he begins to suspect Dr. French has romantic designs on Agatha, in parallel with events in the book. His paranoia makes him dream of killing Agatha, after which he drives off in the middle of the night, winding up in the King Edward Hotel, and requests room 23. The book stops on chapter 22, with Fingerling on a balcony, trying to decide whether or not to jump after murdering his lover, Fabrizia. Walter sees Ned the dog again and follows him to the grave of Laura Tollins, who died on her 23rd birthday. Her body still missing. Walter looks into her death and discovers Laura was sleeping with her professor, like Fabrizia in the book. Walter thinks the professor wrote the book as a confession and visits him in jail, but he proclaims his innocence. Eventually, Robin and Walter discover that every 23rd word on every 23rd page spells out two messages. Visit Casanova Spark, dig beneath the steps to heaven. The other, I warn you, hell is waiting, Sparrow Man. This leads them to Casanova's Park later that night, where they discover Laura Tollin's skeleton, but when they return with a police officer, the bones have disappeared. Agatha arrives with Dr. French and with dirty hands, which arouses Walter's suspicions. Walter confronts her about taking the bones and accuses her of writing the book. She admits to moving the skeleton to protect him, but that, in fact, he wrote the book. He returns to the hotel room, where he tears down the wallpaper and finds chapter 23 of the book, identifying himself as the author and declaring it his confession. Walter then remembers his father killed himself, and his suicide note was pages of things that added up to the number 23. Walter loved Laura Tollins as a college student, but she eventually began sleeping with her professor, and when Walter confronted her, she declared that she never loved him. He went into a rage, stabbing her, then burying her in the park. Walter then went to the hotel room, wrote the book, and jumped off the balcony. He survived with severe injuries and trauma, but ended up in the institute where his therapist, another 23 fanatic, published Walter's note as a book. Walter suffered memory loss, forgetting his crime, and upon leaving the institute, he met his wife, Agatha. Ultimately, Walter turns himself in, freeing the professor and relieving his conscience. Though entering prison, Walter Sparrow seems optimistic about himself and his family's future, having taught his son about justice. And now we join the others in the Flop House.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Flop House. My name is Dan McCoy.
I'm Simon Fisher.
And Stuart Wellington.
So tonight we watched the number 23, and I have to ask you, the number 23... Scariest number ever.
It is. What I don't understand is the number 23. Did they really have to put the number before that? Like, was 23 already copyrighted?
Yeah, it might have been. It actually might have been.
As opposed to just telling
like a mathematician, or,
maybe.
Oh yeah, they didn't want people to confuse it. Like, it's like a prequel movie to the popular series 24.
Yes, I think that's mainly it.
You know, like my problem with this, the idea of a number as an antagonist. It's like the movie Twister, where they're like, you know what? The villain in this movie is weather. Bad weather.
You know what I hate?
jerk tornadoes. Those jerks are real dicks.
It's just a safe bet, you know, because you know the audience is automatically going to side against numbers.
There's probably not going to be any number sympathizers out there. They're like, I think the number 23 was really misportrayed in that.
When Jim Carrey starts going crazy and seeing 23 everywhere...
Which happens like 15 minutes into the movie.
and not only that, but continues to happen throughout the entire movie. Even by the end... We are all of us still freaked out by the number 23.
And to me, that's like math of magic. That's literally the lowest form of magic. Like, even when I was...
Other magicians beat up mathematicians.
Well,
you know why? Because Square One was a bullshit show. That's a fact. Everyone knows.
Say, like, even when I was a kid, hey, you're thinking of a number. If you give me another number and I add
I'll
5
make you
to it...
Divided by 7, and is this your number?
Yeah,
and you're like,
what? Oh my god, if you go through all these, like, hoops that have been dictated to me by you, the magician, you'll come up with a number. That is totally amazing.
Well, it's math magic, dude. I don't know if you knew this, but numbers are magic.
Oh.
Well, for instance, the number 23 is the murderer's number.
You know, the thing, I think we're really missing a key point, guys, and that it's that fucking numbers and math kind of fucking boring.
Well, that's... Yeah.
The director and the fucking screenwriter, who I have serious issues with.
Okay, well, I don't think that we can really talk about the top-notch screenwriting in this movie without talking about what our favorite character's name was from the movie. Stu, favorite character's name from the movie.
Oh my god, was it the Widow Dobkins?
That's a pretty, pretty good one.
No, it was actually Dr. Sirius Leary, PhD.
Yeah.
Who's Sirius? Named Sirius?
Well, a psychiatrist.
Sirius Black from the popular Harry Potter series is the only other Sirius I can think of.
A fictional character. Not like, I don't know, my best friend in second grade, Sirius Johnson.
I don't know.
Sirius Satellite Johnson.
I don't actually interact with that many doctors, but is it like a requirement that they say Dr. Sirius Leary in this case, Dr. Sirius Leary, PhD? Like, it almost seems like they're rubbing it in my face.
I'm tempted to go with our hero's name, but the name of the writer of the number 23, not the script for the hit movie, sorry, Jim Carrey.
The hit movie 23. The number 23, excuse me.
But the novel within the hit movie, the number 23, which is also, I think, called the number 23.
It is called.
The author of that book is Topsy Kretz. Topsy Kretz, ladies and gentlemen.
Topsy Kretz.
I think there's a double meaning there. Somewhere.
My favorite character name was Jim Carrey's character. His son's name was Robin Sparrow.
Right.
Robin Bird Eagle Sparrow.
And then he had the same haircut as his son. That was a weird decision. Dan.
Well, I think it's
way to go, Dan.
I think the point is that they had a lot in common, father
yep,
and son.
Sure they did.
Hair.
Yep. One of the things they shared in common was a love of a specific hairstyle.
You know what? You know what number occurs more than 23? One. That's a number that occurs
yeah,
a lot.
Hey, you better watch out for that number. It's a real spooky number.
There's no movie about how creepy it is that the number one is all over the place.
Yeah, that is true.
Jesus.
I want to talk about something today, guys. And that's the fact that this is the second movie in a row we've watched as a group where there was literally no bad guy. At least memory had a really scary bad guy.
Yeah, remember in the old days when movies had antagonists?
Okay.
And you had your main character and they were beset upon by a person or an organization. Less like a concept or like a really bad thing that was just sort of going on around them.
A free-floating phenomenon.
Right.
Like 23-ism.
Sure, yep.
Numerology is terrifying. I just want to throw that out there.
Let's be clear.
The idea.
Well, that's why in all of math magic, 23-ology is known as the dark arts, the black arts.
Sure.
No one should ever fuck around with that scary-ass number magic.
You know, I think the thing is, like, if this was a better movie, we would all be admiring it for the fact, like, but you know what was really cool about that movie? There was no antagonist.
Like, wasn't that kind of, like, interesting?
The antagonist came from within.
That sounds like me, actually. Yeah. I would say that.
The antagonist is within the movie.
But it was a failure on storytelling terms.
Well, let's how many levels did the movie fail on, Dan?
Hmm. Well, there was the initial level, and then...
the surface level, let's call it.
Well, all right. This is one of those movies where there are two stories, basically. What we'll call, like, the primary story, what's going on in, quote, real life.
Sure.
Where Jim Carrey is slowly descending into madness with Virginia Madsen, his wife, and his son. There's the second level, which is the stuff that happens in the novel, The Number 23, which Jim Carrey is reading. The problem in basically literally every movie I've seen where there's a secondary level of fiction going on, like we see a movie or we see a novel.
Where the characters in the movie are watching a movie, right. And this is the movie.
Right. And it's greatly affecting them.
The problem is, every time, what they're watching is the biggest piece of shit. Like the biggest, like, cliche-ridden piece of genre crap. Maybe the problem is it's hard enough to write, like, a compelling screenplay on one level. This will also, like, have to write, like, a compelling sub-screenplay.
Right. The idea that, like, you spend all this time and effort and you're working on this thing that you're really, really proud of and think is really great. And then you go on to write another equally amazing piece that lives within the first piece. It's either that, or maybe it's fear that, like, the stupid little, like, story inside your story will end up being a lot better than the larger story. So you kind of want to dumb it down a little bit.
It's kind of, to me, it makes me think of the movie Good Will Hunting. It's anytime they try and say somebody's, like, really smart or somebody's, like, really good at something or, like, something is really amazing within the book. It's,
Studio 60 recently with like got a lot of shit for like
that's slightly more contemporary.
Oh, we gotta set up these guys as really good sketch comedy writers. Oh, but we gotta show the sketches and they're basically sub Saturday Night
arguably not that good of a sketch.
Yeah.
No, I think your point was that that you've created a fictional world in which these characters all really like this book that you, the viewer, are also getting to enjoy, and it is really bad. And there's no reason why any character should enjoy it, because it's bad.
And I also think that they feel this compulsion to be like, you know what, we have to downgrade it. Like I'm writing this really awesome screenplay to indicate to the viewer that within the screenplay, what you're seeing is fiction. I have to make it slightly crappier.
Like, I have to make it, like, symbolic of literature. Like, that dame had a shitload of gams on her.
Well, I think, I mean, we do have
to... Like, whoa, who wrote that?
Her gams just wouldn't quit.
We do have to talk about, like, the book, The Number 23, within the movie a little bit. I think that's kind of, like, a crux of a lot of my problems.
Parallel to talking about the book, The 23, let's also talk about the way, the voice in which Jim Carrey...
Yeah, precisely. Because Jim Carrey has a normal voice normally when he talks.
Sure, he's reading lines and he's speaking in his normal Jim
Carrey
voice.
Like he's a regular human being.
Sure.
And Simon, his character is his mind voice.
Sure.
Of him reading the book. You know, like when you read a book yourself,
right.
You know, viewers at home or whatever, and you're reading a book. You obviously do it in kind of stupid voice. You know what? Jim Carrey does the same thing in the movie, The Number 23.
That's something fucking we all surprise, want. That's something we all have in common. Everyone does that. Like, yeah. And then this weird thing happened.
Basically, like, what happens is Jim Carrey starts reading this book, and he starts finding all these vague parallels, extremely vague parallels, between his life and the life of the book.
I think extremely vague is the right word for it.
The character in the book is this sort of like sub Raymond Chandler detective character who.
Whoa, John Cheever?
No, not John Cheever.
Did you just say John Cheever?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think he's a character like drinking martinis in like New England.
We'll play back the recording later and we'll see. I think you said John Cheever.
This saxophone playing.
A character who, by the way, at no point in the movie plays the saxophone.
Never actually plays the saxophone. He holds the saxophone as if he might play it at any moment.
What he does is he leans against a window ledge in a wife beater while the rain is coming down outside with the saxophone slung loosely across his chest.
Yeah.
Remember that? Remember?
Yeah, we were all...
I'm taking you back there, Tim.
No, I remember how we were all hoping that at any moment he might start playing the saxophone, and it never came.
Yep. From Baker Street, the Jay Rafferty song.
Yeah,
of course. Saxophone riff.
That's a really good song.
The most famous saxophone riff in all of rock and roll.
And the character in the book calls himself Fingerling. I can't divorce from the concept of finger banging somebody.
Right, fingering. Like, hi, it's me, Detective Fingering. Man who enjoys
like,
fingering.
Excuse me?
Like, what? I'm Detective Fingering.
I've named myself after the sexual activity I most enjoy.
Fingering. I really like a good
the most
finger.
Satisfying act in all of sex.
Yeah, in my entire arsenal of lovemaking, finger banging, most effective tool.
Now, the thing about it is that this book is actually turns out to have been written by Jim Carrey back when he was insane.
You're spoiling the whole
spoiler
movie.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's totally. Holy shit, the twist is real.
Well, but we have to discuss the twist.
I have to because...
No, because now that the cat's out of the bag, it's once again... Now, I don't know if I've mentioned this in previous casts. I really hate movies that have twists in them. I really don't like it. It turns out that the main character was the killer the whole time, or the other person was the killer, or the friend that you never knew was the killer.
There were ghosts all the time.
Everyone was always a ghost. It's what they've done is they've taken maybe like C+, B- quality Twilight Zone episodes and like, hey, let's just have movies all be like that now. Wouldn't that be weird if that happened?
But the twist. Every movie's like that now.
That's the twist. All movies have a twist.
Let's be clearer though, because I mean like there are good twists in
the Go, name them. Shoot. Name five of them. Right now. Don't think about it. Name five movies with a good twist ending.
I'm not going to
name
five of them.
No, you'll name five of them, Dan. Name two of them.
Memory.
Okay, that's one. Stuart, good call. Dan, Stu just threw you an alley-oop.
I'm going to name two, and they're both Christopher Nolan movies.
I
liked Memento, and I like the twist in The Prestige. And I'll tell you what. In both...
That's two.
In both...
From the same guy.
In both of those movies,
I don't know if that counts as two.
The point is, in both of those movies, the twist enriches your view of the rest of the movie. In the both of those movies, the twist is semi-surprising. I mean, you may or may not have seen it coming, but it is a twist. And then if you look back over the rest of the movie, you're like, oh, I get it. That casts the rest of the movie in a different light. However, that light is still logical.
Sure.
That light makes sense.
That's fair. Once
Whereas
again,
in this movie, it doesn't make any sense what's going on. Like, at the end we discover, oh, wait a minute, Jim Carrey was a crazy person who killed a girl, then went to a hotel to write a long suicide note that was then turned into the hit novel, The Number 23, which was published by his psychologist.
Sirius Leroy.
While he was...
Dr. Sirius Leroy, PhD, who then went on to publish his novel in Vanity Publishing.
Yes.
It ended up at a used bookstore where his wife, Virginia Madsen, found it, bought it, read it, and then recommended it to Jim Carrey to read. Oh, holy shit! What a nightmare that in turn.
The thing is, I don't know if you understand this, but the only reason he actually was able to read the book was because he got attacked by a magical dog.
You mean the dog Ned, right?
Yeah, the magical bulldog that bit his arm and was kind of like a guardian.
I'm just going
to... A guardian of the dead, I think.
I don't know if you remember this, Stu, but if you add up the numeric where the letters fall, the name Ned adds up to 23.
Holy shit.
Do you think
that was intentional?
No, I think that was a happy coincidence.
First, Jim Carrey gets released from, Arkham Asylum.
Yes, let's just call it Arkham Asylum for sake of argument.
Then, literally, on his way out of the asylum, he bumps into Virginia Madsen, who I think is, carrying some sort of cake.
Yeah, it looks like she's carrying a cake.
And
an ice cream cake, I think.
They end up getting married.
Sure.
And then later on...
They go on to have a son named Robin.
On Jim Carrey's 23rd plus 23rd birthday, maybe. I don't know what it is.
I think it was his 32nd birthday, which is, of course, 23 back.
She hands him the book that he happened to write.
To tell you the truth, we were talking earlier about how in a number of different works of fiction, they have a tendency to throw in an additional work of fiction which seems to capture the main character's mind and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Carrey's character, not only does it take him forever to read the smallest book I've ever seen, it looks like somebody's notebook with the number 23 sloppily pasted on it.
Virginia Madsen's character reads this book, I guess, in the course of an evening.
Sure.
And then she hands it to Jim Carrey.
A lazy afternoon she reads it.
Who reads it basically at the pace that the screenplay requires him to have read it.
Right.
Which is
tremendously slow.
He can't read it faster than plot developments would dictate. He's reading what's...
Otherwise, we'd be watching the movie and fast forward.
Yeah, what looks like a 200-page book, he reads over the course of, I guess, a week. Even though he's theoretically obsessed with his book.
And he's reading it constantly.
One would theorize that in addition to reading the book, he supplements it with maybe browsing websites.
Let me point out a subtle detail you might have missed. When Virginia Madsen gives him the book 23, he has a very unusual reaction.
He's like, books, huh? What's so fucking great about books? Almost as though he's never read a book before. So it's possible that he is, I don't want to say like functionally like illiterate, but maybe he's just a real slow reader. He needs a nice softball pitch. So when he reads, he's like, and then one time the number 20
with his fingers squeezing out each word.
Maybe. It's very possible.
I originally brought this point up because this is actually me supporting the movie The Number 23.
Really?
In all these other like movies and stuff, they have like a work of fiction which captures the main character's interest. And this one, at least, it makes sense to some extent because he wrote the fucking thing. Right. So of course he thinks it's cool.
Sure.
He's like, oh my god, that was really smart.
Like, man, this is a really good, compelling book.
It makes a lot more sense that if, say, some actual other human being wrote it.
Just
like,
some jerk wrote this fucking stupid-ass book.
Because at that point, that would just make me think he has no taste.
I can't sympathize with our lead character anymore because clearly his literary taste
is poor taste in literature.
Yep. For the birds, and he reads slowly, borderline retarded. That's what his dog catcher's license says, I bet.
Yeah, let's take a moment.
That's a pretty whimsical job, huh? Dog catcher? He's a professional dog catcher. That's a whimsical job. Are there professional dog catchers anymore? Whose whole job is just to, like, hang out and, like, drive around town and be constantly in radio contact with a switchboard to see if there's a stray dog sighting?
I think, to be fair, he works for animal control.
He doesn't have any paperwork to go out, any, like, veterinary work to perform. He's exclusively a dog catcher with a tranquilizer dart shotgun.
Yeah. It is odd.
You know, going back, Dan, I think we should analyze, since there were literally three characters in the movie, why don't we analyze the performances of our three leads?
All right, let's do that
You want to start with Jim Carrey, Dan?
All right, Jim Carrey. I have to say, the number 23, I guess, was presented as a potential Jim Carrey comeback vehicle.
Which, again, as we were discussing, is really weird.
Yeah, it's not like Jim Carrey has had, like, this, like, string of, like, super flops.
Or, for Christ's sake, Jim Carrey, what did he make a movie in, like, 1992? Who's heard of that douchebag ever?
He made that Fun with Dick and Jane, which, like...
very recently.
Yeah, people didn't see it, but, you know, recent film, people didn't
see it. It was a major
theatrical release. He made Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind,
which was critically received.
Critically acclaimed. But I thought that he did a good job in what was a really good movie.
Sure, I mean, in any case, the point being here that this is not a la, like, John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. Where you're like, holy shit, this guy hasn't been in movies in a really long time,
and now he's
in this very unusual, different kind of role.
But the thing is, with this movie... I don't know.
It was just the movie he made this year. Like, it was this year's movie. And last year he made a different movie, and the year before that, a different movie.
However, saying that, if I was going to cast a movie about a guy's slow descent into madness, like a potential time bomb of a killer.
Like someone really tightly wound.
I would not pick Jim Carrey.
However, if you did pick Jim Carrey, would you shoot a lot of weird, erotic sexual scenes that feature Jim Carrey? For a sex appeal.
I would, and I would have him cradle a saxophone in a lot of scenes.
Like, any goddamn second, I'll start blowing on this fucker.
Like, a year or two ago, Christian Bale was offered The Machinist and The Number 23, and he's like, well, fuck The Number 23, and he managed to, like, hand it off, Jim Carrey just happened to walk by the trash can, and, like, he's like, Number 23, what's this all about? And he's like, holy shit, I wrote this one day.
Like, oh my god, this is the screenplay I wrote all those years ago, when I was 23 crazy.
23 years ago.
I like to imagine that's actually what happened.
Yeah.
Now,
Virginia Madsen.
Virginia Madsen, I gotta admit, I think she's kind of hot.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I can see it. Her presence in this movie was almost like a not presence, like a cardboard stand-up. Like someone who was there to deliver important lines.
She had that really good line where she
plot
was like,
lines. Oh, yeah, holy shit. Well, do we want to talk about that yet, or do we want to save it till later?
No, tell me.
Really good line, the best line in the movie.
I may have forgotten it already.
No way, there's no way you could have forgotten
the one
that.
Where she tells Jim Carrey to kill her in front of all of his beautiful 23s.
So there's been 23s the whole goddamn movie, and Jim Carrey's freaking out like, I just discovered I was a murderer, I murdered someone, I can't believe it, I don't even know who I am anymore. And she's like, you're not a murderer, you're not a murderer, you're my husband, I know you. He's like, no, you don't know me. And she's like, well, then kill me right now. And he's like, no, I can't. She's like, kill me right now in front of all of these beautiful 23s.
and Dan laughed just like that because it was a really good line.
It was.
You know what? Someone wrote that line.
Sure.
Someone was sitting down in front of an old timey ass typewriter, and they were like,
"He wrote that line."
Oh yeah.
He sat back, took a sip of his martini,
lit another cigar.
He said, "That's money in the bank."
He's like, "This shit is gold, solid movie
gold." He called up his broker, and he's like, "Yeah, just put it on number 23.
Wait. His broker or like a roulette deal? Like,
no. 23 is a publicly traded number.
The publicly traded account, 23.
Well, the thing is, he risked it all because he realized so much money was coming in.
Sure.
Even though to put it all on 23 is obviously no risk.
I have a new system for when I go gambling.
Huh.
It involves 23. Always hoping for a 23 somehow.
Now that you've revealed your secret,
everyone's going to cash in, and exactly. Gambling will disappear as a phenomenon.
Basically, Virginia Madsen could have been played by anyone who was like, this role is called wife.
Right. Your job is to read the important plot lines.
I think one of the weirdest things about this movie, focusing on the wife, where for literally about 5 minutes, the audience kind of thinks that the wife is the killer.
Right.
Well, for like 5 minutes, maybe.
Sure.
And then they're like, actually, that's just bullshit. Jim Carrey was the killer. And they even went so far as to have like weird flashback moments where she was like, this book could have been written by a woman.
Yeah. Where it's like you keep seeing like her face, like, this book is written by a woman. The number 23 is my favorite number. I'm the killer. This book was written by a woman. Number 23 is my favorite number. I was the killer.
Someday I'd like to write a book to totally mess with somebody's mind.
Well, remember though, the first twist was that at first you're watching a movie that's like, oh wow, Jim Carrey's reading this weird book that's making him want to kill his wife.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Right. It actually doesn't make me want to do that. In fact, it just makes me want to figure out who wrote this book. Wait a minute. This book was written about someone who was really murdered. Who was the murderer?
Right.
Was it my wife? No, I was the murderer. But I'm not actually a murderer. Now, the best part is that first part, the whole descent into madness, because we keep talking about descent into madness, but that is literally only like the first, I don't know what, like 35 minutes of the movie, and then it becomes a different movie.
Now, was Virginia Madsen topless in the movie? Who was topless in this movie?
I think that was a body double.
I think it was a body double as well.
Because,
I think it was the girl that he eventually killed.
I asked this because we have to make it clear that we watched the unrated version.
We did.
Of the number
we did not watch the theatrical release. We watched
there were two options on the DVD, and we opted to watch the unrated.
And I think
version.
We made the wise decision because this movie had a lot more erotica in it than I would have imagined it would have. There was a lot of Jim Carrey's ass. A lot of his ass. Like a lot of scenes. A lot of there's a lot of goddamn movie sex scenes where. The woman is on her back. She's still wearing her bra. The man is sort of like undulating like waves, and you can see his ass the whole time. And it's Jim Carrey.
Simon, that's called proper lovemaking.
Oh,
I think
wait,
you and
wait,
I are
wait,
gonna,
wait.
I think
wait,
I got
wait,
a podcast to make
wait,
you listen.
Wait a minute.
To,
you're not supposed to take the bra off.
Anyway.
Oh shit.
Our third major character, who I want to talk about a while back.
Yeah, this was the one that...
Danny Houston.
Sure, Danny Houston.
Danny
who
Houston.
I would know from what else?
He was...
The Proposition.
And The Proposition.
That's true.
He's briefly in Children of Men.
A movie called Silver City, John
That's
Sayles
true.
Movie.
Soupy Sayles?
He was in the Soupy Sayles story. So, John Houston, I guess...
Danny Houston.
John Houston's son, I guess.
Yeah.
I always like seeing Danny Houston movies, and I liked him in this movie. I thought he was probably the best character in this movie in terms of like he had that Danny Houston quality of being like oddly creepy.
Like is this guy a murderer?
Was it when it was like in the story, the number 23, where he had a goatee and his name was like Dr. Marius Phoenix?
Yeah, it was Dr. Phoenix. They're goddamn goatee. Movie names. Oh god damn it. These goddamn movie names. Stu, quick, give me a movie name. Make up a movie name right now.
Laura Tollins.
Chet Granite. Dan, give me one.
Dr. Inferno Fireburn.
That's a little extreme, but sure,
yeah.
You go.
No, yeah, that was...
It's
okay,
all about brainstorming.
No, okay, shoot, quick, pass it to Stu. Hot potato, Stu, what do you got?
Hot potato.
Movie name.
Walter Sparrow?
Jonathan Shadow.
Nicholas Steelwolf.
See, these are goddamn movie
mean
names.
Mean Man Cruelson.
No, you're going too obvious every time. Like, this is bad guy, the guy you want to hate.
But Jerk these... Monsterly.
God damn it. They're not names that people have in real life. They're names that scriptwriters make up because they're like, looking around the room.
Needing to indicate character.
Mitch Couchwall. Table podcast. Beer can cowboy boots. Like, you fuckers are just making up bullshit. God damn it. Why don't you just look through the phone book or think of friends' names? Friends would, I'm sure, enjoy having their name appear in a movie.
Well, the other thing is, when you're working on a production of the scale that I'm sure the number 23 was, you should take your take the screenplay with the list of names and go up to one of the many people involved, possibly somebody on, like, craft services or, like, a grip.
Sure.
And be like, have you
the guy who brings the apple boxes.
Have you ever heard of somebody with the last name Dobkins? And they'll be like, no, because that sounds like a bullshit made-up name. Like, oh, okay. X.
Let me just X that out.
What about the last name Tollins? Like, you'd be like, no, absolutely not.
What about if I call this character, Tolliver St. Clair? Like, that's not a real name.
First
you
of
should
all,
name them that.
It's like, is he a porno actor?
God.
There was more to talk about that movie than there actually was the movie itself.
Yeah.
What was it, 27? A trim 32 minutes?
Mm-hmm. It was a
32
little...
32 minutes and 23 seconds.
Wait a minute, 32 is... 23.
Yep. Man, this is scary.
You know what else I thought was... You know what else pissed me off about that movie? It'd be one thing if there actually was the number 23 everywhere. That would have been kind of cool and spooky. But a lot of times it was 32.
Yeah.
It's like, that's 23 backwards. Like,
no.
Well, yeah, but it's not fucking 23. And like, no, but it is, because both numbers are in it.
They really worked hard.
Yeah,
hey. It's like you were saying when
it's
we were
got
watching
23
the movie.
In it.
Like, I was like, oh my god, there are atoms in everything.
Right.
Everything's made of atoms.
Weird.
I still don't understand at what point Jim Carrey's character assumed that because the number 23 was involved somehow in, like, life, that, like, all life was made up of 23 variants. Why that was a bad thing? That, like, mathematics generally uses, like, what? A system of tens, where it's
sure.
Like, you know, you got 10, 20, 30, that kind of bullshit. Like, yeah, once as soon as I figure that out...
you lost your mind.
I literally can't enjoy life. The sun is a little bit darker.
Exactly. You know what else pissed me off about this movie? The whole goddamn twist all came down to the fact that he fucking had amnesia.
Yeah, that's true.
That's bullshit. That's a goddamn twist movie bullshit. You could name two movies. There are two movies with good twists. There might be, in the entire canon of films, perhaps eight others. Perhaps. In all movies there have ever been. And yet they persist. They fucking persist in taking what is just ostensibly like a kind of action thriller. Like, oh man, what if someone did go crazy? What if this husband went crazy? And what if there was also a twist in the end? Wouldn't that be good? Like, no, just, oh, god damn it.
I liked High Tension, and there was a twist in High Tension.
Yeah, well, I didn't care for High Tension.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I liked High Tension, too, but the twist in High Tension you can only take on the most metaphorical level.
Like, well, I didn't like the twist
apply...
part about it. I liked the fact there was a bunch of gore and shit.
All right, but the,
and there
well,
was at
the
least
point.
One female
we're talking about twist,
scene.
Stuart.
Oh.
If we're talking about twists, you can't hold up High Tension as an exemplar of a good twist.
Of how because, good it was because of the gore in it.
Because, like, literally, the problem with High Tension is there's a non-existent truck following them the entire time. It doesn't work as a twist ending. I see the shock in your face.
He's remembering
them
like, wait a minute.
Right now. Wait a minute, that twist doesn't make any sense. Anyway, let's wrap this
let's
segment.
Let's break it down.
Let's review High Tension.
Let's wrap this segment up and
wait, which segment was this? Oh, this is the main segment, the body. The actual body of the cast.
Break it down.
This was the reason that the podcast
break it down.
This is Final Judgment. And I've got some special Halloween month categories.
Ooh, I like this.
So, guys, was this movie a total frightmare?
Okay.
You're a dick, by the way.
Was it scarifyingly funny?
Okay, that's a little bit less dickish, but still sort of your dick.
Or was it snorifying?
that's actually really good. I like that one.
So what do you think?
That's kind of like my snooze factory.
Yeah.
I think this movie, you know what? I'm gonna break my my curmudgeonly streak I've been having here. And I'll say the second one, kind of, I guess. I kind of liked it all right, I guess. I mean, it was stupid, but you know what? It was watchable. It at least wasn't like really poorly produced. You know, like, yeah, it was okay, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little up in the air, guys. On one hand, it was really stupid.
That's true. Yeah. Whoa. I don't want to give the impression that it wasn't stupid.
I didn't like it at all, dude. What was the worst one? The snorifying.
It was snorifying.
I think it was totally snorifying, dude. It wasn't really scary. There's no blood.
I'm going to go with Simon. I'm going to say it's scarifyingly funny. You know, like Joel Schumacher, not a good director. I'm going to go out on a limb. Yeah.
Guys, you know what? We've said a lot tonight, but Joel Schumacher, not a skilled director.
Not a good director. However, competent. We didn't just sit through Memory.
Right, well, right. Sure, no, that's fair.
It kept moving at a good clip. Just the idea, the very idea that we were, that he had the audacity to ask us to be scared of a number.
You kind of respect the balls.
I kind of enjoyed it, you know.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is, Joel Schumacher, he's not going to be breaking any home run records. He's the guy you put up in the batting lineup when you needed somebody on first base.
Sure.
You need to get a single. You need to get a really good bunt. Yeah, sure.
Wait, did he make Mothman Chronicles?
Oh, no, I don't think he did.
It feels like a Joel Schumacher, right? Though, doesn't it? Yeah.
That was so
yeah, it did. But again, that was scarifyingly funny. That's another one of those movies where you're watching and you're like, yeah, this movie kind of blows, but I don't know, I guess like I'm not mad that I'm watching it. Like, I don't want to punch the DVD.
Oh.
Hey, let's watch Mothman Chronicles.
Let's do that after we're done recording this. That'll be fun.
It'll be a nice way to kill an evening.
Oh,
somebody start bother. Some fucking popcorn. Some bread and butters.
Popping some fucking Pop-Tarts.
But let's turn away from things that we hate.
Sure, let's talk about good
things
stuff.
Things we love. I know I'm springing this on you guys a little bit, but normally when we talk about things we like, you know, it's things we've seen recently.
Sure.
Because this is our special October, like, sort of Halloween month podcast.
I like where this is going.
I'm going to break the thing. I'm going to say, is there some overlooked horror movie
that
you would like to recommend to people?
No, it makes sense.
Want to go first, or...?
I think it's Stu. What do you got?
Wait, this is supposed to be something I like and not something I hate.
Yeah, this is a horror movie that you've seen in your life that you think is really cool and you think most people might not know about.
This is my little moment to talk about a movie called Night of the Demons.
Yeah, I knew it.
It's hands down my favorite Halloween movie of all time. You got demons. You got a bunch of nudity. You got Lena Quigley. You got the weird. You got the weird opening where the old guy's like, "Goddamn kids!" And then he holds up an apple and a razor blade. And then at the end of the movie, he accidentally gets killed by a razor blade apple pie. It's just a solidly well-made movie. So you should watch it right now.
Right now.
Right now. I'm sorry. I feel very strongly about this. I bullshit a lot. I'm kind of like a silly guy, but this I feel very.
But in all seriousness, this is
fair enough,
Daniel.
I would like to recommend Brain Damage. This is 1988. Frank Hinlotter. This guy, the director who did this, directed Basket Case, which is much better known.
Sure.
He also did Frankenhooker.
But I'm not familiar with that one.
I would recommend Brain Damage. Get the uncut version, the unrated
version.
Wait,
is Brain Damage the one that has Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman in it?
No.
Or is that Brain something? It's something Brain, right?
No, that's like
the Brainiacs?
It is something Brain.
The Brain Masters?
There's a Brain film that is the legendary teaming of the Paxton and Pullman.
Guys who for the long time I thought were the same guy.
But no, Brain Damage is about this worm named Almer.
Wow, I've never seen that.
Who basically injects this psychotropic sort of substance into this guy's head. And, you know, like so many horror movies, it's sort of like an allegory for other things. And this movie is an allegory for addiction.
We all know how we're all addicted to drug worms.
This drug worm basically makes this guy kill people. And, you know, the 80s were a golden age for horror. And it's got this weird, like, it's kind of like if Repo Man was a horror movie.
Now, this is actually funny. It's funny that this is the question for the show. We talked a lot about how, well, Stu did, about how stupid it is in movies when they have, like, a story or another movie or a book in the movie that all the characters talk about either being really good or really scary. One of my favorite horror movies is John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. I really like that movie for reasons that have never been clear to me. Like,
it's
I watch
tough
it.
Sell, dude.
I know. I realize that, and that's why, like, I don't bring it up that often because I know it's crazy, and I watch it, and I can't point to what it is about it that I like.
Sam Neill.
That's part of it. Sure, I like Sam Neill. I think it also has to do with there's a bunch of scenes in an asylum, and that's always scary. I don't know. There's just something about it. Like, I always get little goose pimples.
I like John Carpenter. It's not my favorite John Carpenter movie, but
it's one of my favorites.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man's your favorite.
Prince of Darkness.
Sure. Prince of Darkness.
I actually kind of like
that. I think Prince of Darkness
is
blows.
An overlooked John Carpenter movie.
I said kind of. I didn't say I really liked it.
Bad.
It's not like it's Halloween
like
or something.
Ghost
it's not
of
the
Mars
ultimate
is
shitting.
The bad. Shut your mouth.
No. Whoa, Dan. John Carpenter's Halloween is literally one of the shitties. And it's been fucking canonized, and it's bullshit, because it's not very good.
You can
good.
Talk, but this part
is... No, you will not edit this out, you son of a bitch. No, you will not edit this out. At the very least, because the joke about editing out is too funny. Don't edit it out. Leave it in.
I think you're really selling this joke as being significantly funnier
no,
than it actually is.
It's really good. Trust me. It'll play a lot better than it sounds
it'll
to you.
It'll play in
Peoria. Yeah, it plays. So, yeah, what's the next one is what? What are we talking about?
Well,
what's
right,
the next one?
No,
hey, are any fucking new Saws out on DVD? Let's watch a goddamn Saw movie. How about that?
Saw 3.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Let's watch Saw 3.
No. Dan, are you that we shouldn't watch Saw
Why not?
3 because it might be pretty good.
Whoa.
I didn't
wait
say pretty good. I said it might be too competent for this.
Well, we just watched a Joel Schumacher film. That's competent.
All right, so tune in next time when we may be watching See No Evil, Primeval, The Grudge 2, or Saw 3.
Wait, you said the movie about the fucking alligator, right? That was on there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That had Orlando Jones in it. I like to point out that Orlando Jones and Jürgen Prochnow are in
Dude, Primeval. He was in The Mouth of Madness! He was.
I know. Yeah. He was also Duke Leto of Atreides.
He wasn't he also Viggo? From Ghostbusters 2?
No!
Who was that guy?
But he was the guy...
Jürgen Prochnow's dad?
But yes. Jürgen Prochnow was the guy they were trying to get released in Air Force One.
Yes. Wait, maybe I don't know who Jürgen Prochnow is.
You don't.
I don't think I do. It's very possible.
Wait, would you rather see The Grudge 2, Saw 3, or See No Evil?
I kind of want to see Saw 3.
Saw 3, probably.
All right, two votes for Saw 3. Two beats one.
So, we'll watch Saw 3.
Awesome!
Before we sign off, though, I've been forgetting this for the last few podcasts. For all the listeners out there who have not done so, visit the flophousepodcast.blogspot.com.
Oh, yeah.
For show notes and all things Flophouse.
Yeah, check out blogspot.internet.com. / the podcast jerks.
The flophousepodcast.blogspot.com. If you like the show and have a little time, while you're there, click on the links. You can vote for us at Podcast Alley or write a nice review in iTunes.
You should also tell a lot of people you know about this.
Sure.
And play it for them.
And you can send us emails.
This one wasn't very funny.
Well, it wasn't our finest work.
Jerk. And you can send us an email at theflophousepodcast@gmail.com and we may respond on the air.
Yeah, wouldn't that be weird? What a great SD
segment.
Won't
that be a delightful
wait. Reward to
that,
you?
Are you saying theflophousepodcast@gmail wasn't already taken?
I'm saying that theflophouse@gmail was taken.
Oh.
And thus theflophousepodcast@gmail.com
was
is
not
our
taken.
Official
sure, great.
Address. Thanks for checking into the Flophouse tonight. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Simon Fisher.
Good night.
This is only funny to you, goddammit. This is the vanity joke of the entire project. Dan's favorite joke. The joke that's not that funny.
Come on, let's go.
He's going crazy. It's so funny to him. He can't. Look at him! Stu, look at Dan! Dan thinks this joke is that funny.
He's not even laughing, he's just making a weird little noise.
Because he's laughing too much. It's like when you start laughing and it's so funny that you can't even actually laugh anymore. You're just like, ha, 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 ha.
Alright, let's settle down.